Are you ready for a war?
It's a trap.
Game over, man. Game over.
She just killed a helicopter with a car.
I was out of bullets.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to BCD. That's right. And we're recording this podcast featuring the movie Primer. We will review it. We will break it down. We will dissect it. Surgically dissect it.
I feel stupid after watching this movie. It's like,
what the? Well,
not that the movie made me stupid. It's just that it seemed like everything going on in this movie just, I feel dumb.
As you should. Anyway, we'll get to that later.
Are you saying I'm stupid?
We'll get to that later.
Oh,
anyway,
okay.
So, this review is live on March 1st. That's right, people. Game of Thrones is only 30 days away.
Whoop, whoop!
Yeah, anyway. So, before we hop into reviewing Primer, let's talk about the box office. This was a god-awful weekend at the box office. It was bad. You want to know why? Because Identity Thief is number one, again.
Oh, my God.
Look how much it only made.
Well, granted, and yes, this is pretty bad. It only made $14 million. So this was just a bad weekend box office in general. There wasn't a lot of people going to the movie. But I believe this was the fourth weekend for this movie. Because it was in the first 2 weeks, and then Die Hard went in the third week, and then it came back. Anyway, $14 million. We've already trashed this movie enough. Don't go and waste your money. Number two was Snitch. That's the movie starring The Rock. I actually cut a screening for this movie. And holy crap, it's actually not that bad. It's actually pretty good.
Wait, The Rock couldn't beat Identity Thief?
No, he couldn't beat Identity Thief. Well, because I'm honest with you.
Only $0.8 million.
Okay, and it was $1.8 million, because it grossed $13.2 million. But okay. I'm just saying, like, it was the marketing for that movie doesn't do any favors either, because it looks like a wanna-be-good, really bad action movie. It's actually a really interesting character drama. It's a little heavy-handed with it, because it's actually got, like, a really political, a lot to say about the justice system, so it's a little heavy-handed in what it's trying to say. But The Rock actually, this might be one of the best roles no one's ever going to see him in. Like, he's actually, like, pretty good dramatically. Like, there's a scene I was like, dang, dude, he's actually, like, acting, you know? He was pretty good. Anyway, number three, Escape from Planet Earth with $10.6 million. Number four, Nicholas Sparks in Safe Haven with $10.4 million. And, oh my, A Good Day to Die Hard. Did you die hard really quickly? $10.1 million. That's right. Die Hard went from number one to number five, and it only made $10 million. Yeah, you know, wow. I don't even know what to say. Die Hard just got owned. I don't know. I don't think we're going to be seeing any too many of those retro action movies anymore, though, because Last Stand, Bullets to the Head, and A Good Day to Die Hard, with all three of these movies not doing that great at the box office, it's hard to see the studios getting behind more of these movies. And this was shocking, because last weekend it had a decent opening weekend, but it just bombed. But anyway, that's the box office. John McClane might have to retire the APKAs for now.
You know, they're just going to make their money with Expendables 3.
Well,
because you know everybody's going to watch that for how ridiculous it's going
to
be.
Well, we'll see. Anyway, moving on to our news section. So, we're going to talk about the big show. The big show.
Showtime.
We don't mean Bama's mom. We mean...
Whoa! Gosh! Did not know that was coming. Man, I might just...
Have you met my mother?
Yeah, I have.
My mother would punch you in the face
She probably would. Mrs. Bama, Rogers, don't... that comment didn't happen. I hope she doesn't listen to this podcast.
I don't think she does.
Otherwise, we're in trouble. And by we, I mean me. Okay, so anyway... By the big show, we mean the Oscars, the Academy Awards, the coveted, the big night in movies, okay? So, no matter how you feel about these awards, they're big. They make a big impact on a lot of careers and what movies are going to get made in the future and who's going to get their pet project made next. For instance, Tom Hooper makes King's Speech. What does Tom Hooper get to make? He gets a crap load of money to make Les Miserables, you know, because he won Best Director, Best Picture. Anyway, so we're going to go through the awards. Stoll, just kind of chime in. When you want to. Oh, actually, no. Before we list specific awards, what did you think of the show in general?
Well, I've seen the Oscars before, and I've seen bits and pieces of it before, but this is actually the first Oscars that I sat down from beginning to end and watched the entire thing. And actually, I enjoyed myself a lot. Now, I have heard from some people that I've talked to that this was a better one to watch, so I guess I got kind of lucky in that respect. But I enjoyed it. I was very entertained throughout the whole thing. I enjoyed seeing all the different actors and actresses and all of the awards given away. And there were some surprises, but there was also some, you know, everybody knew that certain people were going to win certain awards and things like that. But I enjoyed it. Actually, my favorite part, which we can talk about a little bit later if we want, was when Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which, as you guys know who have listened to me on the podcast before, I'm a huge Joseph Gordon-Levitt fan.
You're such a huge fan that you messed up his name.
That was like five times. Okay, so Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I love that guy. When he was walking down the red carpet at the beginning, one of the people that was kind of going around asking different questions came up to him and asked him a couple questions, and I really enjoyed what he had to say. But that was probably one of my favorite parts. But you know, it was fun. I enjoyed watching it.
Awesome. Well, I thought this was a pretty good show. You know, Seth MacFarlane is getting mixed reviews all over the place. A lot of critics are just calling him, like, just trashing this guy. Like, I read some this morning about how he ruined the Oscars and stuff. But I've also noticed though, a lot of the younger viewers tend to enjoy him. And obviously, he was put there specifically to cater to the young adult male audience. That was kind of who they were aiming for with him. And I think it worked, because I myself, while I agree he was very hit or miss, I enjoyed his hosting much better than at least the last 3 or 4 years worth of hosts. Definitely, I think, honestly, he's probably my favorite host I've had since Hugh Jackman hosted a few years ago. It's been kind of all over the place since then. But anyway.
Yeah, I enjoyed, you know, he was funny at times. You know, he didn't do anything great, but, you know, he's a little bit above average is what he seemed like to me. So
his opening was really funny. It was very Family Guy. You know, like that scene with the gay choir dancing scene, We Saw Your Boobs. I mean, that just sounds, it even felt like one of those Family Guy things where you see Peter randomly do something weird. Anyway, it was funny, don't get me wrong. So William Shatner crashed the party, showed up, and as Captain Kirk told Seth MacFarlane why his show was going to fail. And then there was a slew of hit or miss jokes, some of them absolutely hilarious, some of them you're like, ooh, made a lot of jabs, which honestly, my personal opinion is the Academy could use a few of those, because they've kind of had to stick up their butt, so to speak, the last few years. So it was kind of nice for him to kind of like poke fun at them a little bit, but also there were some jokes a little too far. I didn't notice there was a lot of like jokes about women that, he probably was a little heavy-handed in some of those. But anyway, that's my point. I thought he was pretty good. But I'll go ahead and start listing off the big winners, and we might talk about how this goes. Best Picture, the movie of the night, was Argo. Not my first pick, but I am satisfied. I felt like that was a competently made, incredibly well crafted movie that honestly just as far as didn't really do anything really creative movie, but like, it just felt like a great classic Hollywood thriller. Like, I don't know, and like there was nothing really wrong with it. It just everything worked. I mean, it wouldn't have been my pick. I don't think it anything like, not really groundbreaking, but it was just really great at what it did. And I mean, for a movie that was based on history, I've never been so on the edge of my seat knowing what was going to happen. They convinced me, as I'm watching the movie, that they could still, like, they could F history up, basically. It's kind of getting that, but anyway. Lead actor, anyone. Daniel Day-Lewis, because it's Daniel Day-Lewis. You know, Daniel Day-Lewis, I mean, he's phenomenal, don't get me wrong. He was great Lincoln. I really wish Hugh Jackman would have had a shot. Or Joaquin Phoenix. I wish he had a shot, because both those guys were really freaking great. They were really great. But then Daniel Day-Lewis. It's not fair. There's no David and Goliath. It's David versus God. There's no real competition. Like there's even an illusion that you could win. It's like, dang, guys. You know, normally either one of those other good performances were so good that on a normal year, they would have actually probably taken it pretty easily. But not this year. With Daniel Day-Lewis, man. Lead actress. Jennifer Lawrence from Silver Linings Playbook. It was really tough call between her and Jessica Chastain. I personally was glad they went for Lawrence, but Chastain also commendable job. The best supporting actor was Christoph Waltz from Inglourious Bastards. Not my pick. I mean, he was great. Don't get me wrong. He was playing a character very similar to his Inglourious Bastards turn. And I also thought Philip Seymour Hoffman, who was the next front runner up, I think he deserved it a lot more. That role was way more enticing and unlike anything we'd seen before. So, the best supporting actress. Anyone have any guess? It wasn't Sally Field. It was Anne Hathaway, of course. No content. I mean, like, somebody probably made a joke about it in the opening of the ceremony. He's like, hey, Sally Field, it's good to see you here. I'm glad you're here. So, sorry you're not going to win any awards because of Anne Hathaway. But, anyway. Yeah. So, next up, big upset, probably the biggest upset of the night, was Ang Lee won for Best Director. I was shocked. I literally jumped out of my chair and was like, yes! Because I was so sure Steven Spielberg was going to take that puppy, and I'm so glad he didn't. Because Ang Lee directed Life of Pi, my favorite movie of last year, so... animated movie, Brave, I mean, it was kind of a weak category. My pick would have been Wreck-It Ralph, for sure. Woo-hoo. But Brave was, you know, it was pretty mediocre, honestly. Best Adapted Screen, it only won because it was a Pixar movie. I am going to preface that. If it was a DreamWorks movie, that movie wouldn't have won. I mean, even if it was just the title card, DreamWorks, and it was exactly the same. Everything about it was the same. But it was a DreamWorks movie, it wouldn't have won. It only won based on the Pixar brand. Anyway, rant done. Adapted Screenplay, Argo. That was a tough category. Original Screenplay went to Quentin Tarantino for Django Unchained. No surprise. Best Original Song was Adele for Skyfall. No surprise. Original Score was Life of Pi. I was pretty stoked about that because I did have a really great soundtrack. Visual Effects, Life of Pi. Again, probably the most gorgeous movie I've seen in years. Sound Mixing. Now, this one's worth mentioning, okay? And we had a conversation about this. Normally, I don't give a crap about sound mixing, but this year is different because Les Mis recorded all their singing on stage live, which is a first-time thing, at least in Hollywood, I believe. So sound mixing, the difference is sound mixing has to do with more with the method of recording and the post-production recording, while sound editing is just sound editing. That makes any sense at all. Like, sound mixing, the way you manipulate the sounds and all that type of thing. At least that's what I understand. I read a couple guys blog about it. But anyway, so Les Mis won sound mixing. I was pretty happy about that. Sound editing, a tie. Shocker. Skyfall and Zero Dark 30 both won. And then for outstanding production, Lincoln, no big deal. And that concludes the major awards. I kind of took a few out.
I will say, I've said this to a couple people, and I think it rings true. Nobody's confidence gets boosted like George Clooney's at the Oscars. Because George Clooney did nothing this year, and he had more camera time than any other actor.
Dude, he did every year. It was like that last year, too. He's like, he's just sitting there in the audience making faces, like, and it's always him. It's like him.
And there were so many jokes and references to him from people on stage. Like, people were presenting, like, oh, and George Clooney over there. Nice beard or something like that. Like,
yeah. And then he finally got up on the stage to present an award, and we're like, there it is. Now presenting George Clooney's beard.
Which was awesome.
I think that the second funniest camera, the audience pan, was totally Jack Nicholson. Do you remember at the beginning when he was like sitting there and he had sunglasses on? I was like, is he awake? Is he dead? I'm not even joking. Like, he's just there, and all of a sudden, like, literally right before the camera pans off of him, he turns his head. I was like, he's like, crap, this is the Golden Globes with the crowd, guys. Because he literally looks like he's like sitting there, he's like, and sunglasses on, you can't see his eyes, you're like, he's totally out. It was really funny.
Well, I mean, that's his signature thing, is to wear sunglasses.
And I'm pretty sure...
he wears his sunglasses when he's at basketball games, because I think he attends, Lakers games all the time.
He's like,
he always wears sunglasses.
The only reason he turned his head was because someone's like, hey, we got some whiskey and some Lakers tickets. And he's like, what? Yeah, that's and then when he presented on the award show, we're like, okay, just everyone know, Jack Nicholson is not dead. He is still not all there, but he's not dead. So he did present with Michelle Obama. Interesting.
That was interesting.
It was interesting. Any other news out of the league? Bama, you have one?
Yes, actually. I've mentioned these guys on the podcast before. The people down at Rooster Teeth, based out of Austin, Texas, known for Red versus Blue, a bunch of other funny internet things. They have a web series that they call Immersion, which, if you don't know about it, basically they take things that could only happen in video games and try to make them available in real life. Just to give you an example, whenever you play like a Grand Theft Auto or just about any kind of racing game, you are in the car, but you see the car from a third-person view. And so they would try to replicate that by putting someone in a vehicle, blacking out all the windows, and putting a screen in front of them, and they have to drive the car while looking in a third-person view. Another thing they've done with this, the very classic Mario Brothers game, 2D side-scrolling, give somebody some blacked out glasses that only show them a view from the side, got someone following them with a camera, and they have to go through a little obstacle course, only seeing to the side of them. They've done many other things with this, like a inventory type thing where it's like, because in Doom you can carry like 10,000 weapons and not be encumbered by it at all. And they even tried to do some of that, like rocket launchers, SMGs, all this kinds of stuff. But anyway, they're doing a second season of this show, and it could possibly come to TV. They're in talks with some networks. They didn't say which ones, but it would be only in America, as far as I know. They're trying to see if they can get it out to their international audience. I know they've got a big following in Canada, the UK, Australia is really big with them. So, I mean, if you've never seen anything by Rooster Teeth, and especially Immersion, I would definitely suggest you check it out. And if it does come to a television network, it would definitely be worth watching.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool, actually.
Very interesting, that's for sure. Well, all right. Without further ado, I think we are going to head into the review for our movie, Primer. Okay, so Primer. I'll read the IMDb summary, but there's a lot to talk about in this movie. I'll hit the high points. There's a lot we could talk about in this movie. It's very, very, very complex. Very dry, too, but we'll get into that. Summary is, four friends who are entrepreneurs, knowing that there's something bigger and more innovative than the different error checking devices they've built, wrestle over their new invention. Man, IMDb, that's a crappy summary of this movie.
That is a pretty terrible.
That's terrible.
That's like the first 5 minutes.
That's like the first 5 minutes. Because like literally, there's only four of them for like 10 minutes, and the other two guys.
The two of them just don't even matter for the rest of the film.
Yeah, exactly.
They do show up later.
For like one scene and at the party, but I mean, it's still not.
They really don't.
Okay, so screw IMDb. I'll give you my own summary. These four people that work at this company, they're kind of bored. So what they're doing is they're taking their money and investing in their own business they do on their own time. Two of these guys basically start spending even more overtime in their second job, where they're trying to invent something that can change the weight, I believe.
Yeah.
They were trying to change the weight of items, basically. And what happens is they accidentally, again, this is glossing over, but they accidentally invent a time machine, basically. And then they start testing the time machine. And as the movie goes on, they start to get a little more adventurous with, hey, what can we do with this? First, it starts by experimenting, hey, can we actually do this? Second, they start making, they start doing day trading through the stock markets, so manipulating stocks and trying to make some money off of it. And then after that's where it starts to get kind of crazy. So it gets really crazy. But we'll go ahead and start our review. We'll start with Bama this week. What is your initial thought on Primer?
This movie, I can't say that I really enjoyed it. It was interesting to watch, hard to understand. You had to pay really close attention to be able to understand what was going on, because they never just flat out told you what they were doing. These guys were just going on and on with whatever they were doing, and you had to kind of think, okay, what are they trying to do? They're speaking in such jargon that I can't understand. I'm not going to say that I really enjoyed this, but I'm not going to say that I hated it either.
Okay. Daniel, what is your initial thoughts on this movie?
I would agree with that to an extent. Definitely, I was very confused throughout the film in a sense of trying to figure out what's really going on, trying to understand what's happening, because, as Bama has already said, they speak in their jargon a lot. I believe it was directed by a mathematician, right?
Yeah, he graduated with a mathematics degree.
Right, and so...
By the way, we should probably mention that the movie pretty much totally everything Shane Carruth. However you say his name. First name is Shane. Look him up on Wikipedia. Make sure I get this right. I'm pretty sure he wrote, directed, produced, starred in, scored, everything.
Camera, everything,
editing, everything in this movie. This is a totally independent movie made, and I think this puts it in perspective, for $7,000, which, holy crap, that's impressive. I mean, anyway, just...
Sound quality is terrible.
Well, and the video quality is not great, but again, he did it, you know, with his own...
It's true. For that amount of money, kudos.
Yeah. So anyway, as Ben said, they speak in their jargon a lot. And so there's a lot of words and a lot of things that they're discussing and talking about amongst each other that I just don't get. And so I'm trying to understand what's going on. So that part was a little bit hard, but there's definitely some parts where it's confusing. They do make some decisions and you don't understand really why, because they don't really explain it real well. A lot of the movie relies on dialogue. And so that's kind of what the problem is they rely on the dialogue, but then we can't understand it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what the problem is. But I did find this movie very interesting. I liked what it was trying to do, and I liked, how it tried to take, instead of, earlier we reviewed Looper, and they kind of took the approach of, we're not going to really try to explain time travel. Well, this movie takes the opposite of that and says, we're going to try to completely...
Because that is the point. Looper, that was not... Well, time travel was not the point of the movie. Well,
exactly.
This movie, that is the point.
Like, they're trying to explain how time travel could potentially be possible, how it would work scientifically, mathematically, things like that. And so I really liked that aspect. I was really interested, but it was very dry. Not a lot happened. You're just kind of watching these two characters experiment and stuff. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence on whether I liked it or not. I'm glad I watched it and saw it, but I don't know if I would... I want to go back and guess to watch it a second time, but
it does help.
To see if I can maybe understand it better the second time, but not necessarily because I was entertained.
Right. Well, this is definitely not one to be sit back and chill on, that's for sure. I mean, the movie is meant to be intellectually engaging, which I thought it did really well. It's the second time I've seen this movie, and I really like this movie solely on the fact of how well written it is. Especially for an independent film. Like, the fact that this guy did this is really impressive to me. Make such a smart script and actually figure out how to do it. So those things, that's a plus for me. It gets points for me on that, just because...
It does have a 78%, I believe, on Rotten Tomatoes,
yeah.
Which I thought was... when I went to look at it, I was like, it's going to be like in the 50s. I was like, oh, that's a 78. That's actually a fairly good score. So, but I tried to find it. I couldn't find any information on it. How much money did this actually make?
Because, well, this movie was independently released.
Right.
It circulated film festivals. So, let me see if I can pull something up here. I don't think it's... Okay. Box office only made $424,760, but it didn't actually go wide. It was probably like, at best, it might have opened in 4 theaters. But the thing is, it rotated film festivals. And this movie's actually won lots of film festival awards.
So, you said 425?
Yeah.
So, they actually made like $418,000, which, yeah. I mean, and, you know, for an independent film, it got into 4 theaters. That's really not that bad.
Well, the fact that this movie got a DVD release is impressive, too, to me. The fact that we were able to watch it, I think, is highly impressive, just because this movie is small, really small. So, yeah, I think that's impressive. So, that, for me, that off the bat, it gets bonus points with me. I like the approach to time travel in this movie. Because it's not entertaining, it really is trying to get behind from a mathematical perspective, and what would this look like if we try to really break it down? And it also, but it does touch on the ethics of time travel too. It's not just a cut and dry. It's what if these guys start tampering with it, and when they stop trusting each other and things like that? It's really interesting to see how they slowly but surely that temptation for them to do stuff is always there. And slowly but surely they get there. But, I like it a lot. It's not one I would just be like, man, I want to watch a time travel movie, so primer. But it is one I think is really good to watch, especially if you're really interested in the inner workings of a time travel theory. Because obviously no one knows how it works. This movie is saying, if it worked, this is how I think it worked. And here is all these logistical ideas here. Like, they really get specific with how this would work. So, which I respect for that, and I think it's a really good movie to exist. I think we need a movie like this to reference for, hey, here's a great way to look at a movie that's about time travel. And then here's all these other movies that aren't about time travel, they should use time travel. So, I like it a lot. Again, I would, if you're into time travel movies or even science fiction, I would try to recommend it to anybody. But it's not one I think, anyone's just going to be like, oh my gosh, Primer was so exciting, and I'm like, oh my gosh. I do think it was highly creative, though. Let's go ahead. I'll go ahead and break down. So you guys both mentioned the jargon. Do you think that gets in the way of the movie actually working for you?
I think it does a little bit. I don't think, because there are times where it would have been really nice to truly understand what they were trying to say. I don't think it kills the movie by any stretch of the imagination, but I think there are times where it does hold it back a little bit. And I don't know if there was even a way to do that without the jargon, because that's the point, is they're trying to explain this in that kind of... vocabulary. So I think it does it just a little bit, just It just holds it back just a little bit.
That's a fair complaint. That's actually a complaint, a fairly common complaint of the movie, that it gets, it's so, you know, it's, that jargon does get in the way of.
Like, perhaps, I could see, like, perhaps them, the two guys, like, maybe they meet someone who's not a mathematician, and they try to explain, you know, that's how they would, it'd have to be that kind of explanation, where they are trying to explain it to someone who they know doesn't understand it. But that never happens, and, you know.
And so, honestly, it wouldn't happen.
And you're right, it wouldn't happen, it wouldn't make sense. And
that would be kind of, talk to is,
and the whole point of that scene would be to explain to the audience, so it'd be kind of a cheesy scene anyway, but I feel like that's the only way that they could ever
do that. And if this was a Hollywood film, I think that would happen. But,
right.
But because this is an independent movie, it doesn't happen. Bama, what about you? Did it kind of get in the way for you?
Or? Yeah, I mean, I would pretty much just repeat everything that Stoll said. I tried to just sit there and understand what they were. I kind of caught a few little things, but I mean, it didn't hurt. It didn't like completely cripple the film, but it did hurt it a little bit.
You know, I'm totally with you guys. And I feel like I'm above average, generally speaking, in understanding of like just academic jargon terms, but maybe I'm definitely not mathematics, but. Even me, who's, you know, I've read a lot of science fiction and I can usually pull us, it's still, and even the second time, it's still hard to follow sometimes. We like reading, like, what did he just, like, listen to everything and say, what did he just say? You know, and I mean, and even then, I think I have, you know, obviously not being a mathematician or a physicist or anything, I feel like I've got, you know, above average Joe Schmo, and for me, it was still kind of like, ooh, and it gets more than the time. So I think you guys are definitely, I think you're right, I think it does make the movie, I think it does make the movie it's harder to approach for someone to show. But I'll also say this, it's part of what makes the movie unique in what it is and give it its own identity.
Right.
So I think that's a plus to it. It works for and against it.
I will say, I feel like by the end of the movie, I did finally understand their rules.
We can get into the rules, but I don't want to. There actually is quite a bit of crazy plot twist in this movie in the last third of the movie. So we'll want to keep that off. But if you want to talk about
the rules. The way I understood it, and if I spoil anything, we just edit it out. Okay. The way I understand this time travel works is they get this box thing, and it has, and they can turn it on, and when they turn it on, they leave it, and they go throughout their day. And now the way that they structured, they went about their day for about 6 hours, and after 6 hours, they came back and they got into the box.
They shut it off,
or they shut it off and get in the box.
Yeah.
And what happens is when they wake up, they are 6 hours in the past. And so they wake up, and their person, because when they wake up, the thing has just been turned on by their duplicate, because they call them duplicates in the movie. So, but then the duplicate leaves. So when they get out, they get out, and the duplicate has just left. But they don't actually. They try really hard to never see their own duplicate. Mm-hmm. And so then what happens is that person, the one they come out of the box, they go through 6 hours of life, and usually they like you said earlier. In their previous 6 hours, they would have looked up the stock market and stuff like that. So, when they reemerge from the box, they go and try to make money and do things like that. And then after 6 hours over, the duplicate goes away because the duplicate just went into the box.
Right.
So the first after 6 hours, there's not a duplicate anymore because he just got in the box and time traveled back. So it's kind of a loop, but then it doesn't actually ever fully loop because
it's not a true loop. It doesn't close. It keeps going on
because the first person's future always ends in getting into the box and going back in time and creating that alternate timeline.
Right. Now, folks, I'll just say this much. If you need to pull up a chart for this, because it does get crazy
complicated. It is very helpful. I did look at some charts.
I actually, even the second time I watched it, I pulled up the chart to be like, okay, what's going on? You know, because I get the gist of it. The basic, I'm okay with the basic. What you described, I could follow that pretty well. After that, though, when they start adding all those additional rules, I'm like, holy.
They add a lot more than that, but that is like the most basic.
That's the basic gist of what they're doing.
Yeah.
It gets crazy, and then they start tampering with how long are we going to stay out of the box. I mean, that's where you start getting. I mean, there's points where, like, the 6 hours is a thing, but eventually they start tampering with, and the temptation for them to do bigger things gets there, and they start going back, way back in time. We'll get into that a little bit in the spoiler section, but I will ask you, did you like the rules?
You know what? I actually, once I finally understood them, and finally I was like, okay, this is kind of how it's working. I actually felt like, you know what, like that's actually, if you're going to explain it, I can totally see it being explained that way and not be like, but you're totally missing this point. Because I know I've seen time travel before, like in Back to the Future, where they set up all these rules and then like clearly they break the rules to make something happen, things like that. They stick very well to the rules that they create.
I don't feel like there's any, and I think it works. I think as far as their theory goes, there's not really any holes that I could find. I mean, there's always room for holes, but like they're pretty airtight because they explain things really rock solid. And because it's basic enough, it's not like it doesn't get too convoluted.
And I think what really helps with it is their time travel is within a very short time span. It's like within a day.
Do they travel? It gets a little at first.
Like, I mean, you were talking about Back to the Future. They go years into the past, years into the future, and it's just this big, you know, long thing. And I think keeping it in those short little, you know, just few hour time spans, I think that really helps kind of close all the different holes that they could have.
And I really like they actually acknowledge a lot of those big philosophical questions about time travel, but they don't ever fully explore them so much. Because there's a point where they're like, trying to talk, hey, what could we do with this thing? He's like, F time paradoxes. I don't want to talk about it. Like, I'm just not going to mess with it, dude. Because that's not the point of the movie, to talk about paradoxes. But it's really interesting. They still acknowledge that there's problems. But they do run into some time paradoxes in the movie, but it's not like true paradoxes like we would think of where, like, you're like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. But the movie does acknowledge that they exist. But like I said, as far as the rules it follows, that sets up, it follows them pretty close to a T as far as I can tell. It's really cool. Like, it gets crazy complicated.
These guys' names are Abe and Aaron.
And Aaron is actually the guy. He's actually played by the guy who wrote, directed, produced, did yada yada in the movie. So
they have, especially at the beginning, they try very hard to not be seen by anything when they know that there's a duplicate out. They try extremely hard. For example, like in the first time that they try it out, they go to a hotel room. They shut all the blinds. They unplug internet. They turn their phones off. They basically get rid of every source of information where they can have contact with anybody, and they just stay in the room. They put actually black tarp up, or maybe later. So anyway, they basically seal off any kind of contact info with the public world, so make sure that nothing could possibly crazy could happen. And so they try very hard to not mess up anything.
Yeah, no. It's just important because they are very cautious at the beginning, and that's again that's where it gets muddled because they start to get reckless after a while. They start to get lax and like, oh, we've done it like once or twice. Again, I feel like that's a pretty realistic reaction. Do we want to go ahead and move into the spoilers? I mean, we've kind of laid out the premise for you guys, and we've talked more about like the logistics of it. But I mean, the movie really is at its core about the logistics. That's what it's all about. So, I mean, there's not really a lot of plot we can talk about anymore before without actually dropping the big spoilers where it gets kind of crazy. It gets crazy and kind of hard to follow. In fact, I'm going to pull up a chart right now. All right, so I think we're going to move into spoiler section.
Spoiler!
Then we get crazy. Really crazy. Really fast. Basically, what happens is Aaron decides, "Oh crap! I'm gonna screw with you." He had built in secret a failsafe, which he was going to go back and send him back to the very beginning. He didn't tell anybody he was going to do this, and then he told Abe. But he only told Abe because he'd actually already traveled back in time and used the failsafe, so he could be manipulating everything. Okay, and this is where it gets weird, because then when Abe tries to go back, everything's screwed up. Folks, there's like 9 timelines that go on in this movie, okay?
Yeah, they end up creating, I think, 9 alternate timelines where things happen. So, just to let you know how crazy that really gets.
It's crazy. And basically what happens is, it gets to a point where their duplicates are walking around, and they see their duplicates. There's a point where Aaron who traveled, but using the failsafe, traveled back originally, kills his duplicate, right, drugs his duplicate, and then manipulate, and like that's when he tells him, hey, here's what, I'm going to tell you what to do, I want you to record all your conversations, and then go back in this machine. So there's like, at one point, I feel like there's like, what, 3? I think 3 different Aarons walking around out there, because there's the one that used a failsafe, there's the one that he told to record everything, and then there's the duplicate for that one.
Right.
This is crazy. Right now, Abe gets suckered into this, and at one point, he goes back and he kills his duplicate, which is really crazy. Okay. Now, what's interesting is you see a scene at the very beginning where Abe walks out on this building, and he looks like he's really strung out, like he's had a hard day. And he has a conversation with Aaron. Well, you find out later in the movie that that's actually the Abe from the beginning who is time travel back using the failsafe and killed his duplicate and is visiting with Aaron. Well, the plot twist with that is this sounds so freaking convoluted.
I know, this is so weird.
As crap. People, you just gotta watch this movie and follow it really closely because it is as convoluted as it sounds. Trust me. Basically, after using the failsafe and killing his duplicate, he talks to Aaron. Well, the Aaron he's talking to is the second Aaron, the one the third Aaron, who's already, because he's listening to pre-recorded conversations. Okay, so here's what happens. Aaron number three and Abe number two get together, and they're going to stop other Aaron, who has already used the failsafe to travel way back at the beginning. All right? This is kind of the gist of things. If that makes no sense at all.
I know. It's so.
I feel like we need to make like diagrams with straws and stuff, man. It's the only way this is gonna make any sense.
We need napkins and straws.
This time travel stuff just fries your brain like an egg, man. So point being, this movie is crazy convoluted. At the end of the day, what happens is original Aaron, who has time traveled back using the failsafe, leaves the country and tries to blackmail his duplicate and Abe to some money. And basically what he does is he starts this company overseas, and at the very end it appears that he's building a giant, like a warehouse-sized time machine.
Yeah,
and massive. That's kind of the end of the movie. He gets away with it. And what the other two decide to do is they decide to kind of flee the country too. Abe decides not to. Other Aaron decides to leave. That's kind of like where the characters end up. Like, Abe's kind of like, just honestly, I feel like Abe got utterly screwed by everybody. Aaron number two, with all the pre-recorded conversations, leaves the country because he's scared. He doesn't want to be involved. And then obviously Aaron one's trying to make a crap load of money. So, yes, folks, that's right. There were three Aarons. In fact, there's probably more.
Could be.
Anyway, check this movie out. It's convoluted. Now that we've spoiled the section in a way that makes no sense at all, I don't even think we ourselves know what we just said.
No. That's why I said this movie makes me feel so dumb.
There were lots of charts made into the movie's name. Here's the thing. When I was watching it, I get the gist of what's going on. It's just trying to explain it. It sounds...
Yeah, it's really, really, really hard to explain.
Really hard to explain. And I've got this chart pull up here. It's got like 9 timelines, and it's complicated. But as you're watching it, you kind of follow the gist of what's going on. And when we say there's multiple of the same character, it's not as crazy as you think, because you only see, at most, you see two of them on the screen at the same time. Yeah. But it's like, systematically, they're in the story at different points in time. So, yeah. Let's go ahead and rate the movie. Bama.
Okay, just... Like I said before, not a terrible, terrible film, but not one that I really got that much into and enjoyed. I guess that would be mostly because of just how crazy it gets towards the end, and how throughout, you know, it's hard to understand what exactly they're doing. They never really flat out tell you what's going on. You kind of have to figure it out for yourself. And you know, I know this was an independent film, wasn't made for a lot of money, but I have to kind of grade it on its production value as well. Not very high quality film. Sound quality is just utterly terrible in this, because there's a scene where they're at a fountain and they're talking with each other, and you can hear the fountain going on almost just above their voice levels. Anytime that they're out on the street and there's cars passing by, the cars are so loud you can barely understand them. I understand it's an independent film, not a lot of money into it, but still I have to give it some negatives for that. Overall, I'm going to give it a C+.
C+, huh? All right. Dale, do you know what you think yet?
Yeah, actually, that's kind of funny that you said so. Yeah, I thought I kind of enjoyed this movie. It was very interesting. It definitely had me thinking a lot. mostly because I was just trying to think about what was going on. But it really did have me thinking a lot. I didn't enjoy what it's trying to do and some of the things that it did. It is hard to understand what they're saying, the jargon that they're using, and then there are times where you can't actually hear some of the things that they're saying. Their voices are very quiet, things like that. So there are some negatives to it, but I do like what the movie tried to do, so I'm going to give it a B-.
B-, okay. Well, I like this movie a lot. I think it's a niche movie, so I'm going to say that off the front, a niche movie. It's made for a specific purpose, for a specific audience. And I think for the audience this movie has been made for, it's a home run. I'm not part of that audience, per se, because I'm not a mathematician physicist. However, I have lots of respect for what's going on here. So, and I'm able to follow, it's not like so heavy with the jargon and slang that I couldn't understand what was being said, but there was definitely times where it's really hard to follow. So I'm gonna grade it as, a piece of film and art, and I think that it was really great at what it was doing. It just wasn't something that was made for a lot of people. I don't think this is an accessible movie by any means, but I don't think it's supposed to be. I think it's made by a mathematician, or a guy with a math degree at least, who wanted to make a time travel movie, and he's like, I'm not dumbing this down for mainstream audience, I'm going to make my movie. And I applaud him for that. And I, Bam, I see where you're coming from. I do. And the fountain scene is the only scene in which I would probably agree with you, because it is about as loud as what they're saying. However, other than that particular scene, I would probably tend to disagree with you on grading against the production value, because for what those guys have, they're like doing a knockout job.
I'll agree with you.
Yeah, if you knock it down for that, that's fine. I personally wouldn't knock them down for that. Although that one scene is probably the glaring example of when they could have used some better quality mics.
Another one that was kind of like that, but not so much. It was towards the beginning where all four of them were in the garage, and they're all kind of talking. You get two of them that are off screen, and they're talking to people on screen, and it's just... it's very weird.
Well, yeah, it's different. It's different, and I kind of like that because it feels like it feels like someone in the house is actually shouting at somebody.
True.
Which I'm like, yeah, that's fine. That person didn't bother me. But yeah, it was more of like the, sometimes the background effects would get in the way. Yeah, but I feel like for what they had, I'm not going to mark it against them. I mean, you can't expect if you give me $7,000, you can't expect me to make a movie that looks and sounds like a Hollywood movie, even a low budget one. So, anyway, that aside, I'm not going to take it away. I think this is a great movie. I recommend for people who are big fans of time travel or really hard science fiction. So me, this is definitely a B+, not quite an A, because it's not a life changing movie, and this is not an accessible movie. And as intellectually stimulating as this movie is, and I love that about it, it lacks raw emotion. It's not trying to be emotional, but I'm saying, and there is, the human element is definitely in the movie. But there's not really any time you're really connected or attached to the characters by any means.
That's true.
So there's that working against it. But I think what works for and against the movie. On one hand, it's doing something creative and new, unlike anyone else. But on the other hand, that thing it's doing is going to turn off a majority of your audience. Wide mainstream audience. So anyway, for me, we're looking at a B+, and that's all I got. All right, let's go ahead and close out with our buzz section. Daniel, what are you buzzed about?
All right. As we have talked about several times now on this podcast.
So many times.
For you Game of Thrones fans out there.
I've never heard of Game of Thrones. What are you talking about?
What is this madness?
What is this? We've never talked about Game of Thrones still. I've never heard of it, man.
The new Season 3 trailer has just come out. And it blew my mind.
It's pretty awesome.
Okay. This trailer is an awesome trailer.
It's only 1 minute long.
It's only a minute long, but yeah, it is very, very awesome. It is better than many movie trailers that I've seen. It's probably up there with some of the trailers that I've seen, at least for me. It definitely had me, I got goosebumps while I was watching it. Yes. I got so pumped by watching the trailer. The trailer did exactly what it was supposed to do, get me super excited for season 3. And that's exactly what the trailer did. So I thought it was a great trailer. If you haven't seen it, and you're a Game of Thrones fan, you need to see it right now.
You need to stop this podcast and go watch it right now.
And even if you're not, again, haven't seen much of Game of Thrones, or you're kind of interested in it, but you haven't actually seen anything.
Watch this trailer.
Watch this trailer.
It might inspire you to watch the show, because it really might. It could.
The way that they use the music with the visuals, with some narration, is perfect.
It's great.
It's a very good trailer.
It's really great. And flaming swords, and dragons, and yeah.
So I thought the trailer was awesome, but
and
dragons.
Honestly, the trailer was so good, I may or may not have watched it more than 10 times up to this point.
Oh, whoa! I can't say I'm any better. All right,
okay. So
Game of Thrones
is awesome.
Maybe twice.
Whoa, you got a problem because you haven't watched enough. Okay.
Oh, by the way, I will say that we found out the name to the song. I went and watched the song on YouTube. The
song's good, too.
The song's good. But what's really funny to me is that nobody commented on the song for, like, a year. Now there's, like, thousands of comments. And every single comment says, Game of Thrones is awesome. It's nothing about the song at all. And
what's funny is what the song is singing about is actually not what the trailer's about, but they just frame it just right.
They mix the music very well. Because
the part of the song they use totally highlights Game of Thrones, but like it's about getting revenge and stuff.
Yeah,
oh, man.
I was talking about with one of our guest stars in the past, Matt Andrews. I was talking with him about it, and I was saying, you know, after listening to this song, if I was like on a team of people that was trying to decide what song we wanted to put to the trailer, and I heard this song, I would not have thought of this song. But it fits perfectly.
Also, Game of Thrones has been amazing with putting their songs, because they've used some stuff from the National, a lesser known band out there. They're pretty good, and I'm not even a fan of that band. But there's sometimes I was like watching trailers for season two or like music videos. I was like, holy crap, that was just like amazing song choice. Where it was like, wow,
yeah.
That's impressive.
So they definitely edited the song very well to fit the trailer. So again, Game of Thrones, it's awesome. Season three is coming out. We're gonna watch it.
We're gonna watch it. On the topic of Game of Thrones, throwing this in there right now, there to you guys, the listeners. We're contemplating taking a little break from our BCD days. Contemplating. This is no done deal. We want to see what you guys think, though. On the subject of Game of Thrones, we're talking about taking a break from BCD and doing a specific Game of Thrones fan podcast where we review each episode week by week. But we're not... done deal. We're just talking about it. We want to see what you guys think, and if you're interested in the idea, it's still very much up for discussion. And this is early stages. It's an idea we want to throw out there to you guys.
So
let us know. Tweet us. Facebook us. Text us. I don't care. Let us know why if you'd be interested in listening to a fan cast of Game of Thrones, because we would really like to do one, but we'd also want to keep up the BCD. But we also thought maybe what if we took a little bit of a break for a few weeks. So anyway. Throw that out there and let us know what you guys think, please. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I'm buzzed about is I got an invite to the an early screening of Oz the Great and Powerful for next Tuesday night, and I'm pretty stoked about it. Hopefully that'll be the movie I get to review next month. And I'll say this about Oz the Great and Powerful. The longest time, I'm talking until like 2 weeks ago, I literally didn't care about this movie. And I'm not still like overly like hyped about it, but I'm like, the point I'm actually kind of, even before I was pressed about it, I was like, you know what? This movie's actually looking pretty good. Like, I can get excited for this, because I don't know, something about it, I don't know, it just didn't appeal to me. But the more I see of it, like, there's been some clips that have come out, and some new, especially a couple of the latest trailers, I'm like, man, this actually does look pretty cool. I'm really excited to see James Franco, and I want to see, and see kind of how what they do with it. So I'm pretty stoked for that movie. A press screening will actually be next Tuesday, so I'll actually record another podcast before I see it. So it'll be a couple weeks before I actually get to talk about it, but I'm very excited to see that movie, and keep a lookout for the review on More Monthly's website or the print issue, and yeah, that's kind of what I'm pretty stoked about. Bama.
I'm buzzed about absolutely nothing.
Wow, what a buzz killer.
I am a buzzkill this week. I'm sorry, I'm not buzzed about anything.
You're not jazzed about anything in pop culture.
If you don't like it, I say deal with it.
Wow. Well, there you have it, folks. Bama has no soul. All right.
I have a soul. My soul just doesn't care.
He's not OJ.
Oh, OJ. Okay. So the only movie worth mentioning opening up this weekend is Jack the Giant Slayer. I'll probably check it out.
Is that the one with Obi-Wan Kenobi in it?
Obi-Wan Kenobi is in it. And that is honestly the selling point, because other than that, I don't think it looks that great. Bryan Singer, the one who directed X-Men... Usual Suspects, he's doing it. He was going to be directing the Days of Future Past we talked about a bajillion times. He's directing it. I'm going to check it out just because I see a lot of stuff, but it's not that great. I mean, it doesn't look phenomenal or anything. I just want to check it out.
I just want to point this out. We had no casting announcements for X-Men.
Yes! Oh my gosh, we're free.
We made it.
We made it
through. Or Star Wars.
Or Star Wars. All
we
right.
made it through.
Anyway, I'll be checking out this weekend, hopefully, at a matinee, probably, more than likely. All right, well, again, we're closing out. If you want to follow us, get on our Facebook group. Like us. Please like us. We feel not liked when you don't like us. So, like our group.
Comment. Talk about
it. Please comment. We like comments. Every time I've gotten a recommendation, we have watched it. So please send us a recommendation off of Netflix or things you guys would like to hear or see about, because we will respond. We promise. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us at BCD Flixters on Twitter. My personal is at BigCalKenobi91 and at Masters_review. And next week, we are going to be reviewing The Frighteners. And until next time.
Time travel sucks.
Kill the Batman.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Game over.